Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast presented by Zwift. A late recording. I was in the Zwift van today at the TDU Stage 4, going to see the Wollonga stage, Sol's Wollonga Hill. Sacrilege, some might say, but it was a fun day nonetheless. Going to see the riders presenting the Young Riders jersey, which is, of course, named by Zwift. But the stage started in Port Wollonga, which is on... yeah, it's below Adelaide on the coast, and it's pretty picturesque. Saw Bauhaus just sort of waiting to go to the toilet, and no one knew who he was. Like, people just were standing around him. I was like, he won a stage. He won a stage, and no one knew. Anyway, that happened before the stage. The things you see, the colour of the race, and it then was cross. It was so windy. Like, the wind was so strong. We saw some, like, echelons of riders on the way out there trying to get there. And they would go in and do laps around Wollonga with just doing the lower Wollonga Hill, which is about 1K, 3.5%, with some little steeper parts of it. And there was an exposed windy section as well. And it would finish on that climb. They'd go through the town, like, three times, including the finish, I believe, with, of course, a few intermediate sprints. But unfortunately for Bill Bauer or Simon Yates, both 15 and 16 seconds behind Vine on GC respectively, they were flat. So either break would take them or the bunch sprinters, unfortunately for them. But yeah, you didn't get up, Benji, did you? We gave you the night off.
I don't have to call me out like that. Like, the one day that I don't wake up, you're calling me out here. Come on.
Why not?
Now, on a serious note, I had my alarm set at 4 a.m. still. And I woke up for 1 second and deliberated whether I would open the stream or not and then close my eyes again. So that was not the most efficient decision. Now,
couch
that
Peloton,
being said,
let him know.
Sorry, Couch Peloton. My formal apologies to Couch Peloton, the King of Australia, the Queen of... No, that's the Queen of England. No, I don't
Kings
know.
Kings and Queens of Australia, Australian cycling.
You're the King of Australia now. Anyway, breakaway. Jonas Rutsch, Daryl Impey, those were the two riders in the breakaway. Daryl Impey, a rider that we really haven't seen that much when it comes to his own in this race, I would argue. So they clearly have caught the attention with Corbin Strong instead of Impey, because in the past, those kind of finishes would have been Impey finishes and not Corbin Strong finishes, I would say, at Israel. That being said, we have that breakaway up the road, got like 3 minutes, and we go into the final 75 kilometers, and we have a turn. I don't know if it was a right turn or left turn, because my memory shit. And we saw echelons happening. It was... bike exchange, so Jayco going to the front together with two or three riders from UAE, including Jay Vine himself. And those two teams were the ones that kickstarted echelons. And it were effective echelons this time around. But you would argue, like, 75 kilometers before the finish, most of the time when that happens, that echelon doesn't make it to the finish line. But this one kept going. Now, who missed out on the echelon? Well, Bauhaus must have waited a bit too long at the toilet because he messed up and wasn't in the front part of the peloton. And Caden Gross was also not in the front part of the peloton. So no, let's be honest about it, not the craziest losses when it comes to today's stage. I didn't really see Bauhaus winning the sprint on an uphill sprint anyway. And when it comes to Caden Gross, that's a rider I did expect to do well on a finish like this. But hey, if you're not in the front peloton, you can't sprint for the stage. Haha. That's like the same analysis that you brought when it comes to Roglic and the Tour.
My level.
If you don't start a Tour de France, you can't win a Tour de France.
And the top five on GC were there, I think, as well.
Yeah.
So rarely will you see the second team on GC, or the third team in this case, Jayco, pace for 70 kilometers to keep the seventh place GC rider behind.
Why?
I think they were mainly doing it for Matthews.
Oh, okay. I get it. Maybe, well... do we get it? Like, well, if
Bauhaus
and Groves are behind.
Like they use Durbridge, but yeah, and 82R were pulling as well. I don't really know why. Because Page was in the group and he took bonification. He leapfrogged O'Connor today, and it wasn't a stage that O'Connor could take back time. It'd be tomorrow. Maybe it was just keeping O'Connor safe. I'm not sure. I mean, I spoke to Seb on Israel before the stage. He said, you know, Sunrise was saying, oh, well, Vine's going to get caught out in the crosswinds. And it's obviously, they haven't watched the best race in the history of cycling, Tour of Norway, where there were Abenikos echelons every stage on the plateaus, Ineos launching it, and UAE, no, he was on Alps, and then Vine was fine. But yeah, UAE just looked locked in. Jayco were locked in. AG2R was strong. Ineos were there. Sheffield and Hayter. So it didn't fully come back though, Benji. But it swelled like a group. Other groups did come back.
Yep, that's true. Other groups did come back. Then other sections were once again stronger when it comes to echelons. It was a bit of an up and down when it comes to it. Now, there was a crash at 72 kilometers to go. I think Basso, Leonardo Basso, together with a few riders. And then I was guessing Taj Jones, but the commentary was saying...
It was Taj.
Yeah, the commentary was saying Seb Berwick, but I was pretty sure that if it was Seb Berwick, that you'd be coming into this podcast prime.
I wouldn't be here.
You'd be at the hospital's bed.
Yeah.
Intermediate sprint came a bit earlier. By the way, we hope that Taj Jones is okay because he was on the floor for quite a long time. Didn't see if he got back up and continued.
I think he got back up.
But okay. Then it's all fine. Anyway, next intermediate came at 63 kilometers to go. And Daryl Impey took that one in the break ahead of Ruch. And 1 second in the peloton for Michael Matthews. So that is a second for a rider that's not really a GC rider. Maybe it's for the 1 point that he gets from doing that. Maybe he's going for the points jersey in that sense. The gap now at this point is like 1:10 between like the first peloton and the second peloton. We get to the second intermediate sprint, and there I need your input because I didn't see that sprint completely. And Hugo Pasch won that, so the breakaway has been called by then. Gets a 3 second. Kamil Grade gets second, and Simon Yates gets third. Leapfrogs Bilbao in GC, right? But there was some tension with Gradek.
Well, UAE went too early, and then he or she, I think, or someone lost the wheel with Vine on the wheel, so Vine was stuffed for the intermediate. Bike exchange, Jayco got it a bit better. Ineos were there, and don't know what happened again. Gradek, basically, Yates was getting a lead out. Yates' lead out swings in front of Gradek. Gradek is riding in a straight line. Yates comes across to Gradek. Gradek is probably like 25 kilos heavier than him, conservatively. The Polish ruler. And he just sticks his elbow out to be like, you were not going to come through this space. And then, beats. He basically was there to stop Yates taking more seconds away from Bilbao. But I don't know whether he actually leapfrogged him. I thought they were equal on time. I'll kill time while I open PCS to actually check that. I think Bilbao will take... No, he did leapfrog him, even though they're on the same time. But there's points or bonuses up for grabs tomorrow, Roy Howard stage tomorrow, which we'll preview in a second. But yeah, then it was... The group swelled a little bit. There was some... Like, Alpecin were chasing hard behind. But you could see, I saw them before they did the Lower Wollongong for maybe the last time or second last time. The gap was small, but they just looked so tired, and the group ahead looked fresh. They had multiple riders from different teams helping. Godon, Mickey Scher for Asia 2R were just pacing really hard, and Alpecin were kind of the only ones, and they were fighting an uphill battle literally at that point, because whilst that climb wasn't hard, like in terms of, oh my God, the hardest climb I've ever seen, or like corkscrew, still was a real leg sapper each circuit. But anyway, we get to the finish. Group one staying ahead. We have the majority of the punchy sprinters that we expect, maybe minus Groves and a Bauhaus. And Bauhaus, he doesn't do well on these. Ackermann's actually quite solid on these sort of finishes. Same with Pedersen, obviously, but they're not here. Yeah. We see Ewan has one lead out man. That's Jared Drizner. So when are they going to use Drizner? Is he going to be last man late? Is he just going to pilot Ewan to a wheel? How's he going to use him? UAE are driving it to keep Vine at the front for the 3 kilometer rule, which I presume apply today. Because it's not like a mountaintop finish or hilltop finish. They do that fine. Vine and Bilbao and Yates don't contest this finish, so there's no real changes in the front three. Drizness brings you into the front at 2.1 to go very well, but Ewan then, that's so early, Benji. Ewan then gets washing machined all the way back again, because there's, with an uphill finish, there's like another 2+ minutes of fighting and jostling. And so with 2.1Ks to go, there's so much time for everyone to come around, and he gets washing machined back again. Or is it just Ewan's fault? Would a Mads Pedersen have stayed fifth wheel?
Well, I think Pedersen would have been able to stay in position better than Caleb Ewan. But that being said, he is in the disadvantage here that he is at the front so early, because then you see a team like Ev and Ajazer come by his side, come past them with 3-4 riders. It's difficult for Ewan to remain in a position that matters there. And then that's not even the last wave of teams that comes by. Intermarché comes on the left with 4 riders past everybody, with 2 riders of Cofidis, last of which is Brian Coquard, also coming behind that team. So that's another 2 waves, 2 teams that comes over the teams that were already at the front. And that's really how we go into the last kilometer, with Cofidis being the lead out for Coquard. I don't know who was giving the lead out to Coquard for the team. Alexis Renard. Okay, thank you very much. Very good lead out, because it was a really long one, especially on an uphill lead out. But then again, the sprint of Coquard was also pretty damn long.
Well, he kind of, Corbin Strong was second wheel. I was like, oh, that's fine. Yeah. But then, and Lapinch was third wheel. And this is the first time I got really confused with Trek and Arkea and Cofidis and Ineos in Bahrain. In the maelstrom, I couldn't figure out who was who. I was like, is this a Trek leader? Is this Brustenga leading out Lapinch? Anyway, Strong gets left on the front too early. He decides not to open up, but he sort of keeps the momentum through the corner that then Renard kicks again, or whoever it is. I think it might have been Trek lead out, maybe Tiberi, and Coquard just opens up from so far out. And it's like he jumps so early that Matthews wasn't ready to jump. No one else is even thinking about jumping. And then, because he gets such a gap initially, goes to the left barrier, it becomes a mano-a-mano, like, who's going to close to his wheel? No one's actually getting any draft off him. And he doesn't provide much draft in the first place. And because we saw in Provence, and I didn't mention him for today's stage, which is remiss of me, but, and maybe this is changing, cycling changing, but, you know, I thought, okay, the Australians and Kiwis are going to be sharper. I don't know how Lecoq is going to go in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah,
in Australia and in January.
In World Tour. He's never won a World Tour race.
Oh, but like, he's competed in dot pro stages or better and won, right? You know, he's competed in better. It's more like, is he waiting for, well, Tour de Provence? Not happening. Anyway, he won a stage in Tour de Provence. It was very, very similar to this, to Manosk, with a very long sprint, maybe even against Pedersen. I think it was against Ganna.
Ganna sprint.
It was that. Yeah. He came like third or something. And it was a harder finish than this. But I didn't know his shape. I should have maybe asked Corkscrew, and he just destroys everyone. That's the analysis. Lecoq just ruined everybody on this uphill finish, because we don't have Pedersen here. We don't have Roglic here. We don't have Pogacar here. But even so, Bling came second or third on that Lausanne finish in stage 8 of the Tour. Similar, like a hard uphill drag. And yeah, like Lecoq probably can't win a TDF stage because of Wout or MVDP or Pogacar or Alaphilippe, but he should be able to win more World Tour stages this year, I think.
Yeah, he's been close in the past. I remember there was a Tour de France stage where he ended on a millimeter of whether it was Kittel back in the day. I vaguely remember that. That was a really close sprint as well. He's that sprinter, like, this is going to be a really terrible comparison, but hang with me for a second. Like, Maresco is the kind of sprinter that has the incredible acceleration. Coquard has that acceleration as well, but didn't necessarily have the top speed to compete with the top sprinters. Obviously, I rate Coquard higher than Maresco. Let that get out of the clear for a second. And also, Maresco can't get over hills, and Coquard can. So that's also a very viable selection here. But he should be winning more than he is, I think, with the qualities that he has. But he also had bad luck last year. Wasn't he out with COVID just before the Tour de France started last year?
I'm not sure, because it would have been a tour that suits him. Has he ever done the Vuelta? That's what I want to know. He's done one Vuelta in a 10-year career, which is like, and I guess for the majority of that, he was on BNB and Vital Concept, Direct Energy, Europcar. I think they're all the same team, or maybe a lot of them are the same team. But like Cofidis care a lot more about the Vuelta than those teams. Cofidis have been a long-standing sponsor of the Vuelta. I'd like to see him at the Vuelta this year or the next. But they kind of have to send him to the Tour as well because he's one of their best riders. But he'll become more valuable, especially in this new point system with stages being weighted a lot more heavily in stage races.
Is this specific sprint by Kokar the first thermobiblical sprint launch?
In LRCP history?
Yes, of course. Cavendish back in the day was
not.
Have we called something a thermobiblical sprint?
Yeah, I think MVDP when he did the. If you have to watch on YouTube for that, it's when he beat Alaphilippe and Wout in Tirreno, maybe 2021. I think I called that thermo something. I'm pretty sure moniker to it. Maybe not on the pod, but. Yeah, that was a pretty good sprint.
I thought we had
a premiere. This was a great sprint. I will round out the top 10. Cocard beating Petiot, then Page, Penouet, Strong, Matthews, Godon, Maillard, Heiduk, Ewan, Hayter, 11th. So Heiduk and Hayter both kind of going for it.
I didn't get what Ineos were doing with both Heiduk and Hayter sprinting because Hayter was trying to fight positioning by himself in the middle of the pack with 1.5k to go, was trying to move up himself while Heiduk was doing the same. If you use Heiduk to lead out Hayter here, then Hayter has an actual chance of competing here. But that's not the case. Or is there, do you think that there's this mentality with the Ineos that because Hayter is always at the back of the peloton, that their teammates are like, well, what can we do to help you, man? Like, do you think there's something like that in there? Or?
I don't know what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah. I've been trying to piece it together all week. I think it's kind of it looks like a bit of a UAE situation. Like everyone's, Hardik have your own chance. Sheffield gets to go for his own chance. Platt goes for KOM. Hayter goes for his own chance. That's kind of what it looks like to me, I guess. G did a decent pull, I think. G actually did a nice lead out today. So he and Swift are kind of working clearly as domestiques, but yeah, I don't really know. To be honest.
Betiol. He had a sprint where he was launching his sprint through riders, where I think Liepins was on the left in front of him and some other dude was on the right in front of him. Might have been Page.
Bling.
And he sprints in between. Was it Bling? Was Bling? Okay.
I think Bling.
He sprints in between and he kind of goes to the left too early after going through the riders, where he ends up hitting Liepins and almost crashing Liepins. Now, when I see that, I say, yeah, that's a mistake. And it almost crashed Liepins. It's obviously not on purpose. He's not doing this on purpose. But what do you say to a sprint like that? Because he goes through two riders. He passes the riders before he moves to the left. But Liepins is still on his left while he moves to the left. So that's a deviation on paper. But he's already got a punishment, by the way, for throwing the bead on. 2,000 Swiss franc and 100 UCI points down for Jeff.
Damn. It's an expensive bead on. I think I'll need to check the tape. Was Liepins on the hoods rather than the drops? Because, I don't know, anyway, Betiol clips his right hand and Liepins just full double unclips and somehow keeps it up, nearly goes into the barriers, incredible save. Again, if he goes down, we're talking about this completely differently. Everyone will be talking about it and,
disqualification.
Strong chance he gets disqualified, but he didn't crash, so it's obviously not dangerous. Whether you want
to
call it a deviation or not, you don't need to deviate to get disqualified for something in a sprint, in my opinion. My opinion, in the rules, dangerous or reckless behavior also is sufficient for sanction. So it's whether you subjectively think squeezing through a gap that's too small, or is it not too small? Is it the fact that Bling, moved a tiny bit from the right. Not a real deviation, but there was a gap. The two of Liepins and Bling, when they both shift their weight, it then squeezes a bit narrower. Betiol's already committed to the gap. Is that just sprinting? I'd have to look at it you know, closer again, I'd probably lean towards, ooh, like, it wasn't a good look, but it is January. So, you know, police holiday, sprint police holiday. I'm still on that. So I'll be like the QCI commissar. Maybe Benji, they'll sanction him on Tuesday, like they did for the bid on. Like, yeah, there'll be a 48-hour delay.
Perhaps. Now, there's something I want to mention that we didn't mention after stage three. Did you know that Sven-Erik Bystrom was fifth on the corkscrew stage? This guy's so underrated. Ninth in Algarve last year. He was also close on that Hater Andalusia or something stage that you made a video of at some point.
Alcalá Real, 1K11%.
Like, this is such an underrated, versatile domestique.
Was he on UAE or not?
Yes, he was. He's a Christoph buddy in the past.
It's funny because they kind of need him, don't they? Like, he would have been pretty useful. They're kind of the rider they need, but he went down to my show with Christoph, but then he signed for a year longer than Christoph, so he couldn't go to Uno X. Maybe, all right, his contract, I assume, is up. Maybe he'll go to Uno X. He's a pretty solid rider. It's fine.
He's really bloody good. Like, he's genuinely underrated. Less, he's one of those domestiques. He is the legend, man. He's a legend. Overboard. He's the new Alex Aramburu, okay?
Well, you don't need to be rude about Bystrom.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, I thought you were trying to pump the guy up. he's a good solid rider. He is. He's very versatile on his day. I remember he was in a Dauphiné break, the stage Thomas won from that late attack. It was like super hilly. He was quite strong in that move, went solo, dropped the rest of the break from memory. He's a good rider. But yeah, that's the stage. In terms of GC, it's Vines to lose. He remains 15 seconds ahead of his nearest rival, which is Bilbao and now also Simon Yates. But I think he'll be happy that Bilbao didn't take any time because 15 seconds is a lot to make up on the next stage. Sheffield remains in fourth on 45 seconds, Schmidt on 46, Hayter on 50, Bystrom 54, Page 56, and Tiberi 9th on 58, O'Connor 1 minute back in 10th. Just doing some quick maths. For example, Page, if he takes an intermediate and the stage, he goes into 4th. He can go from 8th to 4th. He also already went from 16th to 8th today. The gaps from 4th to 9th is 13 seconds. So they're really tight gaps there. It's just a big 30-second gap from the podium to Sheffield. Speaking of which, I actually, thanks to Zwift, got to present Magnus Sheffield with the Young Riders jersey today, which is also sponsored by Zwift, which was cool to do. The 20-year-old American, big, big talent. Obviously not the last leaders jersey he'll be wearing probably in the next couple of months if he does any other stage races. Winner of Brabantse
Pale. 2025 Tour.
I did call him for 2025 Tour. I didn't say that to him. I thought it'd be a bit weird. He was like, hey, by the way, yellow jersey in about 18 months. So, no, that's longer than 18 months, isn't it? I can't do maths either. Tomorrow, Benji. Mount Lofty from Unley. Hard stage, our version of the Basque Country final stage, 114Ks, up and down the whole time. It's harder than it looks. This is quite a tough little finish. It's got steep pinches. Lofty's 1.5Ks at 6.5%, but there's a lot of climbing before it. Can Bilbao or Yates do anything to Yates and do anything to Vine and the strong UAE team on this?
Oh, the climb is not the hardest when it comes to the gradients. Eh? We're talking about the last 400 meters of Mount Lofty being the steep ones. The last 400 meters are roughly 10%, but all the rest is between a 3% and a 7%, like ups and downs in it. So I would say that this is likely not going to be the most selective stage either, because you'd have to make it a real attrition stage, going really early with hammering it. And do the teams have enough strength to perform like that throughout the race? Jayco might have the strength to make it hard, but UAE has a lots of teammates and strong teammates like Hirschi, Bennett, and so forth that are going to matter for Vine here. So I personally feel like Vine's going to remain in the leader's jersey and will win the Santos Tour and under. And I think there's a, when it comes to second and third, Simon Yates and Bilbao could share that either way. That could depend on intermediate sprints. That could depend on the final sprint. Yates' sprint is not dog shit. There's a 2 out of 10 chance that Yates beats Bilbao in a final sprint, I would say. But when it comes to the rest, we're still talking about major change in the rest of the top 10.
But would Jacko even go to Yates in a final sprint?
That's the big question, because Matthews couldn't win this stage. And is this hard enough for a Kokar? Is this too hard for a Kokar? The last 400 meters?
I need to look at Paris-Nice stage 8. One of the harder ones. He's been okay at that.
I don't know. I think
he can get around it. He was in group 2 in Corkscrew.
Yeah, I've got the same feeling. And the group should be smaller as well. So an Ethan Hayter should be able to compete a bit better than the last few days, I would say. This is too hard for Caleb Ewan, though, based on today's performance. Or was it more the positioning, you say?
Not happening, I don't think. And I think because it's going to be raced aggressively too. Of course, if they noodle around the course, you know, Ewan might make it or whoever easily.
Strong.
Or Groves. I mean, Strong really should. Maybe it'll suit Strong better that it's even more selective and he's sprinting against Bilbao and Yates and co. That might suit him even more. Like, if I was Israel, I would make it super hard. If Corbin feels good and his fitness is good, I would make it Impey, Berwick. I would make it super selective. So you basically have him sprinting against climbing sprinters like a Bilbao.
On paper, he should indeed be competing, but the New Zealand Zebra, I spoke to him after a race, and he said that he didn't have the legs today that he had the last couple of days. So let's hope the legs of the last couple of days can return for this final stage of the Santos Tour Under. And there's other riders. They're like all the Frenchmen that were in the top 5 today. Like, anyway. He was good on today's parkour. Now, tomorrow might be a bit too hard, I think. That's like the opposite extreme, I think. But we haven't seen the potential yet because Penaway is still a young rider. He's one of those Groupama Conti boys. He went earlier to the World Tour team than the other Conti boys throughout the season, I think, in the middle of the season. But Hugo Pasch could... is it too difficult for Pasch? I don't know. Kovi. Or will Vine sprint to secure his GC?
That's the thing. Like, they have to lead out Vine. I think Vine sprint is now underrated. Like, if UAE give him a correct lead out, I think he can beat Bilbao or Yates. Can he beat, I don't know, Strong? No. Tadej Pogačar, no. Well, like, I mean, Pogačar, yeah, like he can win bunch sprints. So, but yeah, that's a really interesting point. Do UAE play numbers? Do they be aggressive to be defensive? You know, here she's close on GC. He's like fringe top 10, I think. Do you, and here she, I think,
about
would
that.
Mind. Well, Hirschi, I think, wants to go for this. If he's being honest, I think they should. Like, yeah. If you're Hirschi, you'd want to go for this stage.
Especially because on Corkscrew, we didn't mention this, but
he was good as
well. We were celebrating UAE there when it comes to their strategies of going all out for Vine. But on Corkscrew, he was chasing Vine's group with other riders in his wheel. So
yeah, Bilbao in his
there
wheel.
Was a bit of tension there. Hirschi was still going for his GC all out. And he didn't care that Vine was up the road. If he could catch him, he was trying to catch him 100%. So I would say that he or she probably also wants to win the stage. I agree there.
I agree. I think he will. I think you can do it in a way that it benefits both by maybe, you know, you can have he or she be aggressive and then put Bilbao or Yates themselves under pressure and put Vine in a seat. But, you know, it could be a tricky little stage. Will they kick it off on the second ascent of Lofty? Seems unlikely. I think if anything, it will kick off 87 Ks in on that Lofty. And then step descent, can they stay away in the finish?
Yeah.
But really, you could go for Hirschi or Kovi in the finish, in the sprint. Kovi, I think you get Kovi on a flyer, Benji. Like when he won that Andalusia stage, you let him go. If you set up the lead out, let his wheel go, Kovi can win this on a flyer. Make Bilbao chase if it's been selective.
Because you're forcing Jayco to just keep on pacing and Bahrain to keep on pacing and not focus on attacking Vine in the process. But you have to keep in mind, let's say Kovi goes and Matthews responds to that, then you've got another issue. Or not.
Matthews, nah, he's on like 2.5 minutes.
Oh, never mind. Never mind.
Yeah. That mechanical completely changed this race. Imagine if Jayco had Yates on 15 seconds and Bling on like 10 45. Seconds.
Right.
Well, he probably would have been on 10 seconds if he was in group that corkscrew group, because he was already ahead of the other climbing guys because of the bonuses. Say he loses 30. That'd be tough because Blink can go long too. But we don't have that.
Yeah.
So anyway, it should be a really good stage tomorrow. It should be aggressive. I mean, they were super aggressive today. Corkscrew, Nettle Hill, it's been really aggressive. No just walking around the last couple of days. I'm really looking forward to it. Maybe Ineos will get it right. It is a hater stage. Like, should suit him. But it should be good nonetheless. I reckon the French guys are flying, young and old. So could be Vive la France again tomorrow. Anyway, thanks as always. Thanks to Zwift for the opportunity to present their young riders jersey today. And we'll see you with the winner's recap tomorrow. Ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.